Wow, tonight's been a great night. So many chips to give out, and it's my great pleasure to be able to introduce tonight's speaker. I've had the privilege of seeing this guy at meetings for all nine, in fact, longer than the 9 years I've been around. And tonight's speaker, guys, I'm going to put a lot of pressure on poor Jack. This guy has a way of looking at things that has really changed my perspective on not only my life, but also my recovery. And I don't want to sell you short. I hope he'll tell you more of the meetings that he goes to so you can come and find out for yourself. But every morning at the Visalia Llano Club at 7:15, Monday through Friday, we have a meeting. On Saturday, it's at 7:30. And Jack's a regular part of that meeting. And if you want to find out what I'm talking about how this guy has a really interesting way at looking at recovery and life, I'd invite you to come and meet him there. But the good news is you don't have to wait. He's going to be here tonight. So please welcome Jack.
They left the chips open. They don't know me very well yet. Good evening, everybody. I'm ATAC Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. Where do I start? Well, to start with first, my real name is Jack John Raymond Hildreth Amarell, Jr. And I like to tell people if you had a name like that, you'd drink too. I first tasted alcohol when I was 9 years old, and I fell in love with it. So much so that when the rest of my family went clamming, I stayed back and drank what they left behind. When they came back from clamming, they found me passed out drunk by the picnic table at 9 years old. I didn't drink again until I was 17. Hey, Lynchel, I was looking for you. Glad you're here. Love you, brother. I didn't start drinking again until I was 17, and that was a direct result of a resentment. And before I tell you about that, I want to back up a little bit and I'll tell you something. I've had two fathers growing up. My real dad passed away when I was 7, and my mom remarried when I was 7, and she married a guy who already had one son, and she had 4 kids herself, so we became a family of 7. And later on, they had 3 more kids. To show 8 is enough, well, they had 8 kids that they had to deal with and raise. And when I was about 15, I don't know, I was in my middle teens, I got really teed off at my stepfather one night, and I told him off. He had put me on restriction for something I did that I deserved to be put on restriction for, and that wasn't what I got ticked off about, although I didn't like being on restriction, I'll be honest, I really didn't like it. But then he told me he was extending my restriction for something I didn't do, and I felt I didn't do, and I knew I didn't do it, and I didn't like it. And I told him, straight up, no, you cannot. You cannot extend my restriction. I said, as a matter of fact, you know what? I'm not even on restriction. You can't put me on restriction. You're not my dad. You do not have custody of me. I have never been adopted by you. You have no parental authority over me. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm not listening to anything you say anymore. If you were anything like my real dad would have been, then I might give you some credit. But you're nothing like my real father would have been, and I have nothing for you. And my mother was there. And she got mad. She got between us. And she told me, Jack, you have no right to talk to your stepfather that way. While he may not have legal custody over you, he's raised you since you were 7. He put you through school. He put clothes on your back. He bought you presents for Christmas and on your birthdays. He took you to all the family functions with the rest of the kids. He treated you like one of his own. He's done his very best to be the father for you that your father never could have been. Because your father was a drunken bum. Your father drank all the time. He didn't work. He didn't have a job. He ran around bars and ran up tabs and paid those tabs with my paychecks. And I worked two jobs. I worked during the daytime at a laundromat, and I worked nighttime waitressing. And then when I worked waitressing, I brought home tips and put them in the kitchen and kept them there to buy milk and bread for you kids. And when your dad came home and he was drunk and he wanted more booze and he was out of money, he took those tips and drank it away. And you kids could do without. And he ran his tabs up so high at the bars that they wouldn't give him a tab anymore. So he started running up tabs at liquor stores. And they cut him off at the liquor stores. So he stole a case of booze, and that's what he went to prison for, and that's why he's not here. That's your dad. That's who you're comparing your stepfather to, and you have no right. Now, I don't know what you guys would think about something like that, but I decided right then and there that I was never going to be that kind of a man. That I was never going to be that kind of a drunk. And that no wife of mine or no daughter of mine or no kin of mine were ever going to say those kind of words about me. And I meant it. And then when I was 17, I got mad and I went out. I decided that I was mad at my mom and my stepdad. They were getting a divorce. And they were getting a divorce because of me. Don't you know I'm all that important? So that made me mad. And I decided to get back at them, I would make them mad. And it seemed to me like the good way to do that would be to get some booze and get drunk. I mean, really drunk. Get in trouble drunk. So I got some friends of mine. I got my cousins, two of my cousins and my younger brother, and we got a friend, an acquaintance we knew, to go buy us a fifth of Southern Comfort, a case of Colt 45, and a case of Coors. I was 17 years old. My cousin was maybe ready to turn 17. My brother was 15, and his younger brother was 15. We went and sat down under an oak tree by Linnell Camp in Farmersville by an irrigation ditch and drank the Southern Comfort, the Colt 45, and the Coors. And we did what we set out to do. Well, I did what I set out to do. I got drunk. And that night I stepped out of a moving car at 25 miles an hour because my cousin refused to stop to let me out when I was getting sick. I seen this stop sign coming and I said, I know when he gets that stop sign, he's going to stop. And when he does, I'll just open the door and get out. And I don't know if he was telepathic or what, because he must have been reading my mind. When he got to the stop sign, he just kept going. He made his left turn and went right through the stop sign. And I don't know if I thought he was stopping or I didn't realize he wasn't stopping, but I didn't care. I opened the door and I stepped out. And the car went that way and I went that way and I did some somersaults and my feet hit the curb. And I swear, I'm not exaggerating. My feet hit the curbs just perfect. I was just like an acrobat in a circus. I came right up to a standing position. And stood there and looked around and said, yeah, I'm bad. Man, Southern Comfort, some good stuff. Woo. And that got me started. You know, I was to drink for 18 more years. I was to drink till I was 34 years old. The last 2 years of my drinking, there was no fun in it. I drank every day. I drank all the time. The last couple of months, I had been working for a place, the Tulare Bowling Alley, as a pin setter mechanic, and I'd been there for quite a while. And they went out of business. They sold the company to a trucking, they sold the whole business to a trucking company and shut their doors, and I didn't have a job. I had a girlfriend. We wanted to get married, but I didn't have a job. And I had a drinking habit that I needed to support, but I didn't have a job. So I went home, I started looking, and there was this place out in Tulare. I think it's a Kraft Creamery now. But it was a brand new factory that they built out there just just south of Tulare and on up to 99. It was brand new, a big business come from back east, put it in, and they were hiring. And they were hiring fresh from the crop in Tulare County. And I thought, why not me? So I went out there and I put in an application, and they told me, come back tomorrow morning for the interview process. And I went back the next morning, and they gave us this packet about this thing. And they had us go in this room, and I walk in the room, and there's like 200 people in there, pretty crowded like this, all sitting at tables with a packet in front of them and a pen. And some guy told us in 15 minutes we were going to be instructed to open the packet and start answering questions. And we had 2 hours. At the end of 2 hours, they were going to ring a bell. We were to close the packet, put our pencil down, turn our packets in. They would review the packets and decide from that who they were going to hire and who they weren't. Before he could finish telling us that, a guy walked through the back door, or through the door we came in, and he stands there and he hollers out, is there a Jack Hildreth in this room? I turn around, I look, and I'm like, I don't know this guy. Why is he calling me out of all these people? What have I done now? So I raise my hand. He says, could you step out in the hallway for a minute? I said, sure. So I went out in the hallway with him. He says, you know what? I was looking over your resume. I'm the maintenance. I'm the head maintenance guy for this plant. And I see that you have an extensive background in mechanics. And I want you on my maintenance team. He said, you don't need to worry with that test. You have a job. He said, all you got to do is go home, get a good night's rest, come in the morning, check in with the nurse. She's going to give you a physical, and they'll assign you to a 30-day shift, swing shift. When the 30-day probation period is up, I'll pull you off that line, and you'll be on my maintenance crew from then on. He said, I just got one suggestion for you. He said, don't go celebrate. Go home, get a good night's sleep, and come in fresh. Don't have any kind of good time celebrating tonight, because they don't tolerate drunks here. That's the way he put it. So I went home, called my fiance and told her, guess what? This is what happened to me. She said, that's cool. I said, yeah, let's go celebrate. She says, okay, I'll get dressed. You come get me. I said, I'll be there in 20 minutes. Went and picked her up, took her to a nice little club. Got us a couple drinks. We danced for a couple hours. I took her home. I went home, took a shower, climbed in bed about 10:30. Went to sleep, set my alarm, went to sleep, got up in the morning, went back to that place, checked in with the nurse, and she said, come on in, sit down. She's sitting at a table right in front of me. Had a whole bunch of papers on the table in front of her. She sits there for a minute. She says, you know what? I forgot one of the forms I need. Can you hold on just a minute? I said, sure. So she gets up and she walks out. A couple minutes later, she comes walking back in, and she sits down from me. I think that's kind of funny. She didn't bring another form with her. About that time, I hear this voice behind me. Mr. Hildreth? I turn around and look. The guy's standing there in a three-piece suit. Real nice tie. I said, yeah. He said, my nurse just came to me and told me something disturbing. I said, what's that? And she says, well, she told me she had a guy in here for a physical to go to work for us, but the minute you sat down across from her, she smelled alcohol. He said, I just walked through the door, and I'm going to tell you, I'm further away than her, and I can smell it plain as day. So I'd like you to do me a favor. I'd like you to get up, walk out those double doors you came in, go out to the parking lot, whatever vehicle is yours, get in it, and drive off our property, and don't ever come back. I got fired before I started to work. So I left there with my head hanging, and I went home. 4 or 5 days went by, and I was sitting in the front room watching TV, and I decided I wanted a cup of coffee. So I went to the kitchen, and I opened the cabinet. It's midday, early morning, midday, before noon, I think. And I look up in the cabinet and there's a quart jar. And in the quart jar is a $20 bill. The first thing my head says is, man, coffee or beer? Coffee or beer? Well, I came for coffee, but you know, I really like a beer. I haven't had a beer for a couple days. So I reached in the quart jar and took the $20 bill. I went to the store and got some beer and had a good time. Came back a couple hours later. My grandmother and my mother were madder than heck. My brother-in-law and my sister and my brother-in-law and their kids had been over to visit, and he's a drug addict, and they had left. My grandmother went to the kitchen to get her quart jar, to get her $20 bill that she was going to buy milk and bread with. And it wasn't there. And she knew he took it. That addict was in my house and he stole my money. And they called him. And they told him that they were no longer allowed on the property. Not you, not my sister, not my brother, and not their kids. And that's the way it was. My grandmother's a strong-willed person. You know, I kept my mouth shut. I came home and found that out, and I kept my mouth shut. I didn't tell them anything. A couple of days later, I decided that was it. October 12th of 1990, I decided I was never drinking again. I've had it. I'm done. I'm not touching it. And I didn't drink for 15 days. Not a drop. Got up every morning. Oh, I got a job. Got up every morning and went to work. And on weekends I was out at rope camp. 1 weekend a month or 2 weekends a month I was out at rope camp, and 2 weekends a month I was drilling with the National Guard. At that time I was battalion motor sergeant of the 2nd and 160th, and I was stealing $20 bills from my grandmother. Go figure. Real good guy. And I didn't drink for 15 days. On the 15th day, I came in and I sat down in a chair in my front room. And I was watching, I think, Family Feud. My grandmother loved Family Feud. That and Jeopardy. And, or Wheel of Fortune. Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy. And I was watching it, and all of a sudden, I started getting this feeling. And this feeling come over me, and I knew I wasn't going to get any sleep. I'm not going to sleep tonight. And I got to be a guard in the morning. And then my head told me something that my heart knew was true. My head says, you know what, Jack? You need to go have a beer. You go have a beer, and this feeling will go away, and you'll sleep just fine. And then I told my head, shut up. I quit, remember? I don't drink anymore. And then my head told me, no, you shut up. You're right. You quit. And you've done real good. You quit for 15 days. So you can go have a beer and quit again. And then the other side of my head said, by golly, I think you're right. So I got up out of the chair and I walked outside, and my intention was to go to the liquor store right down the street and get a beer, and drink it and be okay to get some sleep and go to work the next day. But don't ask me why. I ain't told anybody that I'm not drinking. I don't know if they noticed I hadn't been drinking for 15 days, but I ain't told anybody that I've committed to not drinking ever again. But I decided that store probably wasn't where I should buy the beer because somebody might see me. So maybe I better get in my car and go in town where nobody's around to see me. So I drove into town, and on the way in, I was almost to Frank's Liquor, and it hit me. Wait a minute, my family's all over this town. If I go into Frank Liquor and get a beer, and I come out with it, there's no telling which one of them's going to drive by and see me. I better not do that. I know. I'll go to the to the bar down there on the corner. The only family members that's going to be in that bar are ones who drink, and they don't care. So I went to the bar. And I went in the bar, and I ordered a beer, and the guy brought it to me, and he set it in front of me, and I looked at it, long, tall, long neck Budweiser. And I poured half of it down, and I went, oh, that's so good. Man, I like that. You're right, Jack. This is going to help you sleep real good. So I finished the other half, and I set the bottle down. I remembered to promise one and go to sleep. So I turned on the bar stool towards the door, and the doors opened up, and in walks Terry Winters. And you guys don't know who Terry Winters is, but some people in here do. And I hadn't seen him for about a year and a half, 2 years. He was one of my hardest and bestest running buddies. And he seen me, and he says, Jack! And I seen him, and I said, Terry! And he says, bartender, 2 beers. Now, Terry and I are good friends. You know, being good friends, you don't turn down a beer when they get it for you. Right? So I had another beer. And I was thinking, okay, now it's time to quit. Oh, wait a minute. Terry and I are friends. He just bought me a beer. I got to buy him one. And I can't buy him. Well, good friends don't buy a friend a beer without buying themselves one, right? Bartender, 2 beers. Some people saw this going on. They thought it was pretty cool. Thought we were really nice guys. So when we finished those two, they said, bartender, 4 beers. Wow, you guys are really nice. We finished those. The bartender, 4 more beers. Terry said, yeah, you guys are really nice. We finished those. Bartender, 4 more beers. Next thing I know, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, and somebody in this group of 20 says, hey, bar's going to close in an hour. Let's make this an all-nighter. Let's hit the liquor store and go out to my house. And I said, okay, cool. So we split out the bar and we go to his house. Next thing I know, I'm looking at the clock. It's 6:30 in the morning. I'm thinking, oh, shit. I got to go to... I'm supposed to be in Fresno in a couple hours. And I'm in Visalia, and my house is in Goshen. Oh, you know what? I can make it. I got a Dodge Colt that flies. I'll just grab 2 six-packs out of this refrigerator, throw them in that Dodge Colt, jet out to Goshen, grab my uniforms, jump back in the Dodge Colt, and change on the freeway. I can change on the way to Fresno. So I ran to the refrigerator, grabbed 2 six-packs, jumped in my Dodge Colt, took off out of there, lickety-split, got about 4 blocks, and was oh, shit. I pull over. He pulls over. He puts the cuffs on. I go to jail. I walk into the junk tank. I lay down. I go to sleep. Same routine. I've done it 4 times before. What's one more time? I know the bench. It's got my name on it. I went over there and laid on the bench, laid my head down, and went to sleep. Perfectly content. I'd had an all-nighter. I was good. 6 hours later, the sheriff calls my name over intercom. Mr. Hildreth!
What?
I wake up on the bench. I roll around. I look. I see the bars. I see the guys. I put my feet on the floor. I took a long moment to think it all over. And I busted out crying. I just started bawling. All them guys in the drunk tank thought I was psycho or something, I guess, because they all moved to the other side. They got away from me. Bailiff opened, or the jailer opened the door, and I went to the counter, and they started giving me back my stuff. After they gave me all my personal possessions, the guy pulled out this envelope, and he opened it and dumped the contents out on the counter. It was $2.37 left of my paycheck from the night before. And I picked up my stuff, and they escorted me out the back, and I walked up the ramp, and I walked back to my car with my head hanging, and I get to my car, and the keys are on the floorboard, 2 six-packs in the passenger side. They didn't impound the car, they didn't take my keys, and they didn't take the booze. And it was probably about a mile and a half to my car, and I cried the whole way. And I got my car, and I drove to Goshen. And I walked into my grandmother's house, the grandmother I stole that $20 from. And I sat down at the kitchen table. And my grandmother walks in and looks at me and goes, "What are you doing here?" "Oh, your son's here." "Dan's here?" "No, Jack." "What's Jack doing here? He's supposed to be in Fresno." "Yeah, he's right here." She comes in. I was sitting at the table crying. My mom said, "What the heck's the matter with you?" And I told her. And she looked at me and said, "What are you going to do now?" And I looked at her and said, "I don't know. I don't know. Call somebody for help because I don't know what to do." She said the craziest thing I ever heard. "It's about time." I was like, "Huh? Like you knew something for a long time or what? And you're not telling me?" "About time." Okay, so she gives me a phone book and sets it in front of me. I open Yellow Pages. I find a place. I call it up. I talk to this guy, and I tell him what I just got done telling my mom and my grandmother. It took about an hour and a half. And the guy says, "Wow." He says, "You know what?" He says, "I think I can help you." I said, "Huh?" He said, "Really?" He says, "I think I can help you. If you're willing to follow some suggestions, are you?" I said, "Sure." "Okay. What do you want me to do?" "Well, when do you go to court?" "Oh, let's see. It's November 28th. And they set it for 10 days from today, so that would be October 28th. It would be November 7th. November 7th, I go to court. In 10 days, he says, "Okay, for the next 10 days, don't drink." I said, "What? This is your suggestion?" He said, "Just follow me, follow me, follow me." I said, "Okay." He said, "Don't drink. Go to court. Tell the judge that you think you're an alcoholic, that you have an alcoholic problem, and that you've contacted a treatment facility for alcoholics, and that we've told you that if the judge will postpone your trial till you can complete a program, we have a bed for you. Can you follow those instructions?" I said, "Okay." So I didn't drink for 10 days. I sat at home with grandma and mom and didn't drink for 10 days. And on November 7th, my mom put me in the car and drove me down to the courthouse, and I walked in front of the judge. And when he called my name, I told him what I was supposed to tell him. And the judge looks at me for a little while, and he says, "You know, Mr. Hildreth," he says, "you got several DUIs. He says, you got a lot of public intoxications. I'm absolutely sure you have a drinking problem. I have no doubt that you need some kind of alcohol treatment program. But if I was to decide to postpone your trial until you could complete one, tell me this." I said, "Yes, Your Honor." He says, "How are you going to get there?" And before I could answer, his voice from way in the back of the courtroom hollered, "I'm going to take him! I'm going to take him!" And the judge looks back there and says, "And you would be?"
"I'm his mother! I'm his mother!"
Y'all don't know how funny that is. She's sitting right here. This is my mother. Because she was there, the judge granted that. And she is very stern, let me tell you. She walked me out of the courtroom to her car, drove me straight to Fresno, and walked me straight into the guy that was going to give me a room, and sat there till I was checked in. 28 days later, she picked me up in that recovery home. When I exited the recovery home, completing the program, she picked me up on November 7th, when I went to court 28 days later, and drove me straight to court. Not home, not to breakfast, no coffee on the way. straight from the recovery home, straight to court, into the courtroom in front of the judge. And the judge handed me a packet. Or not the judge, the bailiff. He handed everybody a packet. In this packet was my charges. And he instructed us to read them and be prepared to answer the judge's questions when we're called before him. So I read my packet. And the DA was charging me with a DUI second offense. Problem is, this was a DUI third offense. See, I'd had two within the last 3 years before I got this one. And a DUI third offense carries 2 years in the penitentiary, as opposed to a second offense carrying a little bit of road camp time and a little bit of fine in a DUI school. And I read those charges, and in that program up there, I learned that if I wanted to stay sober one day at a time, I had to be honest. And here I was standing in a court with a packet of charges that were wrong. Going to be charged by the DA, going to be read to me by the judge. And I was faced with a mountain. And I stood there, and the judge read the charges, and he asked me if I was ready to plead. And every part of me wanted to say, guilty. But I heard the words, no, sir, come out. He said, you're not? Why not? I said, because the charges are wrong. More strange words. And he says, what do you mean? This isn't a second offense? No, Your Honor, it's not. More strange words. He says, but I show right here that you had a DUI on such and such a date, and you got this DUI on this date, and that's within a three-year time, within a three-year span, which makes it a second offense. Do you understand that? I said, yes, sir, I do. He said, so it is a second offense. I said, no, sir, it's not. He said, I don't understand. He said, would you mind explaining to me why you feel it's not a third offense or not a second offense? And I said, because it's a third offense, Your Honor. The whole friggin' courtroom went stone quiet. You know that girl that's doing this the whole time you're talking? She stopped. What? The judge looked at me and says, do you know what you're saying, Mr. Hildreth? I said, yes, sir, I do. He said, do you know the difference between a third offense and a second offense? I said, yes, sir, I do. He said, explain it to me. So I did. He said, well, I see you know what you're talking about. And he gave the bailiff a nod. And the bailiff walked out. And the bailiff walked back in. And the bailiff leaned across the table and slid a paper at him and said, he's right, Your Honor. And the judge looked at the paper and looked at me and he said, Mr. Hildreth, he said, I don't know what happened to you in that 28-day program you were in. He said, but I'm going to tell you, that's the greatest amount of integrity I've ever seen shown in my courtroom. He says, however, the DA has charged you with a second offense. That's their mistake, not yours. Since they've charged you with a second offense, I'm ready to hear your plea on their charges. And if you plead guilty, I'll find you guilty of second offense, and there's nothing they can do about it. Now, Mr. Hildreth, I'm going to ask you one more time. Are you ready to plead to the charges as presented? I said, yes, sir, I am. I was being honest, not stupid. So I didn't go to prison. I got road camp time, I got a fine, I got the things you get with second offense, and I got to go to Pine Recovery Center, and I got to come to Visalia, and I got to go to meetings at the Alano Club, and I got to meet all the people I met in Visalia, and I got to find me a sponsor. Now, I'm not the smartest guy in the book, and this meeting is over at 8 o'clock, right? So I didn't do everything exactly the way a person should do it. For instance, there's a pamphlet on sponsorship and how to go about finding sponsors. And there's people that will tell you what that pamphlet says. And if they've read it and know what it says, they'll tell you things like, go to a lot of meetings. Listen to the person sharing. If you identify with that person, if his story is a lot like yours, if his life has been a lot like yours, and if he has a lot of years as a result of working this program, that's probably the person you want to ask to be your sponsor. You need to find somebody who's a lot like you. And somebody who's gotten sober, who got a sponsor and worked the steps. Hopefully he has a sponsor who has a sponsor, and he's worked the steps. And they're working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You find a guy like that, you ask him to be your sponsor, and you stand a lot better chance than if you find the wrong person. So you need to find somebody who's got something you want. Now that last part I heard. You need to find somebody who's got something you want. So I was at a meeting, and this guy was chairing a meeting, and he identified himself as a garbage pail kid, and I didn't really pay attention to that. I'm kind of a garbage pail kid, and it kind of struck a nerve. What I really paid attention to was when he walked in, he was with this girl. And it was his girlfriend. And she was pretty. And he definitely had something I wanted. So I listened to him share, and I kind of identified with him. Yeah, I did the checklist. I kind of identified with him. I checked. Yeah, he's got a sponsor. Yeah, his sponsor works the steps. Yeah, he's worked the steps with his sponsor. Okay. I cornered him and asked him to be my sponsor. He said yes. 2 weeks later, I got invited to their wedding. He'd asked her to marry him, and she said yes. I went, oh, shit, that's not the way this was supposed to go. I had plans, don't you know? It really doesn't matter, you know. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. My mother, my sisters, my wife. I've been married for 10 years to a normie. My wife Maria is sitting here tonight. There's four women here. There's 1, 2, 3 women here who have seen me through all my drinking escapades. One who's seen a few of them. There's one who's never seen any of them. And a great niece sitting on her lap. My Sierra, who loves me to death, never seen me drunk. Never seen the kind of things a Maytag Jack does when he's drunk. With your help and God's help in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's my great fortune that she will never have to see that. My name's Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. Keep coming back.